There is something about over tonifying. So I know in Cantonese culture, we tend to be like, bo, 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 like,
yeah,
like tonify. And I'm like, actually not really, like that can actually have an adverse effect if you're over tonifying. So I would say maybe pull back on that. If you don't know, definitely go see a practitioner. They will do the pulse, see what's happening, you know, with your constitution and give you a recommendation of what you should be doing.
Hi everyone, today I'm joined by Angela Chow Gray, co-founder of Yina, a truly beautiful brand that I personally love and admire. Yina seamlessly blends traditional Chinese medicine, high-performance skincare, and holistic wellness, creating a luxurious yet deeply intentional approach to modern self-care. Angela shares how Yina began with a humble herbal lip care in grad school and blossomed into a brand rooted in centuries of healing wisdom. We dive into the philosophy of yangsheng, nurturing life, and why breakfast is more powerful than you think, and just how 10 minutes of intentional stillness each day can shift your health and mindset. If you're curious about TCM, love skincare, or just want to feel more balance in your daily routine, this one's for you. Angela, thank you so much for joining us today on our podcast.
Hi, Steph. How are you?
Good. So I've been a fan of Yina for, I think, around 5 years now. I was first introduced to the brand, and then I had a chance to speak with Arvina, and it was just so inspiring. So I'd love to learn more about your journey into traditional Chinese medicine and what inspired you guys to start Yina.
Well, our journey, it's been a long journey. Both Arvina and I met in grad school studying Chinese medicine. In grad school, I actually had a lip balm company that had Chinese medicinal herbs infused inside, and that was the sort of the initiation of the concept. So you could say Arvina and I really met and really partnered up via, fell in love with each other via a formula. She loved the lip balm. She was able to buy at the student store. That was where we were selling it at the point before we're going to launch in other retailers. And she just loved it. And it was sort of an endeavor that I was working on, but also doing school full time, which was a little bit.
That's amazing. It's so romantic. I love that.
Stressful at the time, but you know, I was young and I had so much energy, and I loved the world of entrepreneurship, and I really wanted to combine the two, my love for Chinese medicine and my love for business, and also really just sharing Chinese medicine with the world and doing it in a way that's a little bit more accessible. Yeah,
that's amazing. So which school did you go to?
We both went to the American College of Traditional Chinese Medicine. Unfortunately, that school is no longer alive due to some unfortunate reasons, but it was one of the top schools that was there for over 30 years. So that's where we met. We studied the medicine and we both became licensed acupuncturists. And she ended up going to China to study for her PhD. And she got actually a scholarship from the Zhejiang government to study Chinese medicine over there. And at that point in time, I was going in another direction. I was actually wanting to, my other passion is food. So I actually went into learning about how to mass produce food in a very nutritious, dense way, but of course, incorporating Chinese medicinal herbs in, because that's my background. Being Cantonese, we always have soup, you know, drink soup. Every season there's a soup. So
oh my God.
To a wider audience and just share just my passion for cooking as well and combining the two, right? And then I was done with that program after, my Chinese medicine studies. And Arvina was like, hey, I know you did a lip balm. I know you paused it. Hey, do you want to get together and take this to the next level and actually develop a whole line of products? Because both Shein and I have just personal experiences with topical medicine using Chinese medicinal herbs and how effective it is. You know, because our skin is the largest organ in our body, it absorbs at least 60% of whatever we put on top of it, how healing it can be. It really sparked our initiation into diving into formulating. We spent over 3 years doing R&D before we even launched. So that's kind of how we got together. But my passion for Chinese medicine really started at a very young age. You know, that was my first form of medicine that my parents took me to when I had a cold, when I injured myself. I was very much a Tom girl when I was a young kid. I played basketball and in the courts and, you know, would injure myself. And my parents, like one time I had a really bad knee sprain and my parents were like, what are we gonna do? So they took me to a bone setting doctor in Chinatown in Manhattan. And literally the guy gave me this really nasty, I thought it was nasty as a kid, but this herbal plaster that was very smelly and put on my knee. And I'm like, and my parents are like, you have to keep it on. I'm like, okay, I'll keep it on, but it smells so, oh, I don't like the smell, right? And I did because I was, you know, a good kid and I want to get better because I want to get back onto the courts. Literally a week later, I was running around and no
That's
pain.
amazing.
Like it was like healed so quickly. And I didn't think much of that. You know, as a kid,
Yeah.
you're just like, oh, okay, whatever. We'll just go and do our thing. And but thinking back, I'm like, wow, the medicine's just so powerful in so
Yeah,
many ways.
yeah.
And so it just really propelled me to explore and study how we can really utilize these herbs in a way that's less smelly now, but in a way that's
Yeah.
very therapeutic and also can help benefit people.
Yeah, I love that. I think that, you know, a lot of times growing up, you don't realize how powerful these herbs are. It's just like ingrained in your daily, right? And then it sort of takes you to like grow up and really, I think, you know, look back, right? And realize that, wow, our parents really, you know, knew, or like, I think it for me, it was my grandparents that gave me the soups and teas. And yeah, it just really
Very
like that sort of
part of
like,
the culture. Yeah, it's
yeah.
like just do this. And then, you know, coming with a little bit more Western education, you always ask why? Why do I do that? Why do I do that? Like this looks like a worm or like a bug or a caterpillar. Like and then I remember my parents said, oh, it's not. Like it's not, it's just good for you. Just eat it. And then me not knowing better, I just ate it. I'm like, oh, okay. And then as an adult, I realized, yes, it was a caterpillar. That's been taken over by fungi.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah, totally. So, I mean, for our listeners today, I think that we know TCM very well, but I think for somebody who has less experience with TCM, can you explain it a little bit? And then how does it sort of, how do you incorporate it into your daily life in that, and some of the principles behind that?
So it's actually very simple. It's the practice of Chinese medicine, or what we call Yangshen in the industry, is really about taking care of yourselves, like following, eating with the seasons. So like if things are growing this season, that's what we usually eat. We do movement right now, where we just passed the spring equinox, so it's a really good time to start exercising more, start moving your body more, because your qi has been in a sluggish state in the winter time. So in the springtime, you kind of want to have more movement. And then so it's about balancing your life, right, in all different levels, from sleep, eating, sitting, moving. It really is a whole lifestyle, and it's not complicated. It's actually a lot of common sense. If we could break it down, like, by the way, you know, you want to sleep before 11 p.m. because, you know, in Western medicine, we've realized that with the circadian rhythm, right? But in Chinese medicine, we've known this for a really long time. We want you to sleep before 11 because you want to be in the deep sleep before the liver gallbladder time, which is the time where we detox. So there's all these principles and concepts that, what I've learned, because my other background is also biology, so I learned a lot of Western biology, and then I had to take a break and then learn Chinese medicine and then bridge the two and realize, like, oh wow, there's a lot of interconnectedness. There's just a little bit of a language gap in terms of how things are explained. And with more and more research, modern research, you know, being done, we know so many different things. Like right now, we're like, oh, gut microbiome, it's so important. Well, this concept is not foreign in Chinese medicine. We always say everything starts with our spleen and stomach and the digestion, and that is where our illness comes from, right? Is what we put in our mouth.
I really think that that point of yangsheng, right? It's something that we don't talk enough about, right? Nourishing and that sort of like sort of that investment into long term, right? So can you talk a little bit about yangsheng? Because that's I think that's very Asian, right?
It's very Asian. So for some of you who visited Asia, you probably see grandmas or grandpas or, all sorts of folks outside doing morning exercises, or you see qigong, like certain people just standing and holding their arms like for a long time in one position. You're like, what are they doing? You're doing qigong, and it's actually a practice of working with your internal body and your internal breath to actually move what we call qi. But technically, it's air. It's also there's a lot of mental work being done as well when you're doing performing those practices. But anyhow, I digress. Back to Yangshan, it's just practiced for thousands of years, and because it's been practiced for so long, it's integrated into the culture, which is very, very beautiful. And I like, there's just so many components where, as I, explored and studied this medicine in a more deep way, study history as well, you realize like, oh wow, a lot of the culture was super influenced by Chinese medicine because they knew like, oh, if you did this, you would be better or you would not be ill. It's so preventative medicine is such a huge topic in Chinese medicine. It's like the core of what Chinese medicine is. It's like, hey, how do we make sure that you're in the best performance in terms of like, and performance, not like Western performance, like I need to achieve this marathon, be gold, be the best runner. But it's more about like, hey, how can I live my most vibrant self in the best state based off of what I was given genetically, right? Because our genetic dispositions are very different. Some of us are a little bit more yang, meaning we're just more robust. And there are some of us who are a little bit more yin, and we might tend to get sick a little bit easier. But just because we get sick a little bit easier doesn't necessarily mean, oh, we're going to, have a short life, right? It's about how do we balance this so that we can, have a longer life and have a vibrant life. And so we're in it for the long game, and it's not really like a short-term thing. And so we eat with the seasons, right? So we eat certain things. There's all these soups and tonics and dishes, actually, and even food pairings. For instance, if you cook like in the summertime, it's really hot in certain areas, especially in Hong Kong, like where you are, or in southern US, it's hot and humid. So you would usually want something more cooling, right? You would eat maybe a mung bean with a little bit of seaweed in it, and like a cooling dish with lily bulbs. It's like a dessert, but it's actually cooling to help balance the heat that you're getting from the environment. So anyway,
I
you can go
love, I
really
feel
deep
like
into
we
this.
can have a full thing about food, and I had no idea you had that food background. But let me go back to Yina a bit, and your products. I'd love to, hear a bit about your philosophy and how did you formulate your products? So I guess even from like when you were in school, when you had your lip balm, it's so interesting. I'd love to just learn more about that because I think, even when I was young, I had an entrepreneurial bug, but it's just so hard to get into it, right? And you just feel like, oh my God, there's so many steps. And so I'd love to learn about that journey and how you create your Yina products as well. Sorry, that's so many questions all in
Yeah,
one.
no, I'm right for it. Let me know if I'm missing anything. So the origins of Yina, the word Yina means harmony and beauty. It's a combination of both Irvina's name and my name and Chinese names. And it really symbolizes beauty and wellness as one. We're all about, we've done skincare, but it's beyond skincare. We're talking about taking care of ourselves. Like when we put something on our skin, we want it to be beneficial. So nowadays you hear all about the skin microbiome, right? And you want to make sure that the skin is resilient so that it is well. So all of these things, like when we combine our formulas, when we create things, they actually promote the skin microbiome. And so when we formulate not like a typical formulator or typical person in the beauty industry where they take what ingredients are available in the mass, and these ingredients, then they just combine it in different ratios and then call it a finished product. So what makes our products very unique is our Chinese medicinal herbs, we actually extract it together. So if you think about an herbal formula, you actually want the herbs to be together when you're decocting it. So usually you put it in water and you boil it. And what that does is the synergistic nature of how the chemistry works with the herbs actually helps the herbs perform better and elevates its functioning. Yes, there's more research that needs to be done, but I think there's a few that have come out how they say, like, there's paired herbs. Like, if you combine this herb and this herb, then it becomes better. So those are the concepts that we apply when we are formulating our products.
Interesting. Actually,
it gets really complicated, and I think maybe we've overcomplicated things, but it's something that we love and we enjoy doing, and it's a different way of formulating versus what's conventionally out there. I guess my superpower is, I had this talk with someone earlier this week, and I was like, I guess my superpower is formulation, because I just can pick up things, or I know how to combine things. And yes, I have a little bit of chemistry background, but there is something about, there's an innate intuitiveness when I look at the formula and whether it's creating a scent or combining herbs together. And of course, I'm not by no means like a master at any of this. So we do bring our formulas to our teachers, our Chinese medicine teachers, and have them look at the formulas to see how, if it's balanced, a balanced formula, whether it's like good. And then if I get the thumbs up, I'm like, okay, I did well.
So that's amazing.
It's really a collaborative effort.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about a balanced formula. What does that mean?
Okay. So a balanced balance. So in Chinese medicine, balance does not mean 50-50. Balance means it can actually be 20, 80, or 10, 90. It really depends on what are you doing at that point in time. So for instance, in a formulation, you might have 5 herbs. Then you would break out down as you have the chief herb, and then you have the minister herb, and then you have, they have all these names for it, but pretty much it's like you have the supporting herb that helps the chief herb does its function, and then you have a harmonizing herb to make sure that the formula is balanced. It's not too harsh on the human body. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes you might see a lot of licorice in our formulas because licorice root is a really amazing harmonizing herb. So that's something that I've never said, but that's what we put in it. And then, of course, it has a brightening aspect to it as well. So it helps with the skin in so many ways. Mm-hmm. So it's multifaceted and functional.
Right. And what are some of your favorite herbs? Do you find your favorite herb and then you're like, okay, this is really good for this? And, you know, how do you start?
So there's certain herbs. Yeah, there's certain herbs that are really, I mean, herbs should be used as a toolbox, right?
Yeah.
Depending on the season, depending on how you're feeling, you can. So the herbs that we actually put into our formula are herbs that you could take medicinally, ingest as well, of course, in different ratios. But these herbs they work differently. So they all have different functions. So when you go through school, you learn about their functioning, how they influence the various different Chinese medicinal organs in the body, how they pair with each other, what's the function where it's the kind of calm and soothe or clear heat or help nourish and boost. So they all have different functions and they all fall into different categories. So my favorite herb is Dangui, so angelica root. It has such a distinctive scent. And because I was exposed to this herb at such a young age, it just brings back so many amazing memories of like my mom making dangui, like the post menses tea that we are supposed to drink. And you just smell it. It's wafting through the entire kitchen. And you're like, well, what is that? Can I have some? And of course you're a little kid and you're like, they're like, no, you can't have any. Can I have a sip? And they're like, hey, maybe a little bit. You could try, right? So those are just one of my earliest memories that I remember that.
That's so funny. My kids know that they're like, can I smell? And they're like, no, I don't want to try.
Maybe I just had a love for Chinese medicine at a young age because I'm like, oh, it smells so good. Like, give it to me. And it, you know, I think because I need it, I am constitutionally blood deficient. So it's an herb that nourishes blood in Chinese medicine. Mm. So probably I was resonating with the herb because I needed it, even at a young age.
That's so funny. I think you know, when people think of skin herbs, they don't think of Dangui, right? Like they think of, you know, ginseng, or they think of, you know, so it's quite interesting that that's your favorite herb.
Yeah, it's my favorite herb because blood helps skin. So if you don't have blood, you're weak. Blood in the sense of blood seen via the lens of Chinese medicine, okay? Not the Western concept of what blood is. So blood in Chinese medicine is really, you need blood and qi in order to be alive. And blood is more dynamic. It has, especially in women, it's a huge thing. It's if you don't have enough blood, then you will feel more fatigued. Oftentimes people who are a little bit more blood deficient are a little bit more anemic. It's just all these different signs, and blood deficiency can lead to many other things. That's why it's like, it's important to, for me, Dongwei is like a big one because it helps me, but also it helps my skin because if you have blood and you have qi, then your skin will be vibrant and glowing.
Yeah, so it's that really long-term, not just like quick fix type of
thing. And that's why quick fix is called a quick fix, because you're just patching over something that's more systemic. It's something that we always believe that, it's not believe, but it is true. What's happening internally will reflect on our skin, on what we call shen. So just the clarity of our eyes. Sometimes you might see dark under eye bags or discoloration on the face, and you can tell like something is not functioning properly inside the body. So there's all these diagnostic tips that we do in Chinese medicine, right? From looking at your face to pulse reading, to looking at your tongue, to maybe even smelling your breath or smell on your skin, because some people have a certain smell that kind of radiates depending on certain conditions. So it's all very fascinating.
Yeah, totally. Well, when you first came out with Yina, and I think even today, I feel like in skincare and in across everything, right? Not just skincare, sorry, but even in like supplements, traditional Chinese medicine is, it's less accessible, I found, to something like, you know, Ayurvedic herbs or, you know, Korean herbalism. Like for some reason, TCM is more of a backseat to the Western audience. Is that, do you think that's true? And, you know, how have you guys sort of navigated this?
Well, it's definitely a difficult topic. I think partially people might have some judgment just when I even say the word Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at the medicine, it's thousands of years old. Japanese has a branch of Chinese medicine. Koreans have a branch of Chinese medicine. Chinese medicine has been all over, like even in, you know, it's influenced Vedic as well and in Ayurveda as well. Like there's, it's such a broad medicine that was used in ancient times. So we call it Chinese medicine, but is it really Chinese, like in the sense of what we think of as modern day Chinese? I can get into a whole nother talking topic about that, but let's not digress. So back to the way communicating about Chinese medicine, I think it's because of the language, because maybe we've chosen, when we were translating the Chinese text into English, we chose to use English words that were liver, right? Like the word liver qi stagnation. They're like, what is that? Like, is something wrong with my liver? Like, no, your liver's fine. It just means that things aren't flowing. So again, the way we've translated language has caused maybe people to not understand or may apply Western medical knowledge into understanding these concepts, which it should be separate because it's a different medical system. So in Ayurveda, you have all these different words that you don't normally hear. So then you're more open to understanding, oh, what is that? That might be interesting. And also Chinese medicinal herbs, maybe because it's been in the US for a little while, like since the 70s when it was first introduced, then people have heard of it already and they might have gone tired of it versus Ayurveda. You haven't heard of it much besides the last maybe 10 years to hear more about it, even though it's also an ancient medicine, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting thing, but It's very effective. And I was just talking to someone who had, 5 years of IVF, and she said the last time it worked because she had acupuncture and Chinese medicine, and it really helped her. So, you hear all these stories, you learn from people, and then you realize, hey, there's something to this medicine. Like even myself, I was, raised with Chinese medicine, but then I loved Western medicine, was very passionate about biology, and got into plant biology and went deep into that and kind of like shunned a little bit of Chinese medicine until I took one class that was called Medical Ethnobotany. And that opened my world to, hey, majority of the world uses what we deem as in the West as alternative medicine as their primary form of medicine, right? And then you're like, oh, okay, maybe I've been a little bit maybe prejudiced about it, or I should revisit this. So that really, really re-sparked my journey into diving deeper and understanding more about what Chinese medicine is all about.
I think that similarly, TCM for me was like my grandparents, but for my parents, because they were educated in the US, they were like, is it safe? There was like that whole conversation, is it safe? Where are your herbs coming from? And there was just a lot about that. And so I think they were raised on the fact that you only have to pick one, right? Eastern or Western, and we pick Western medicine. But I think today, it really is sort of that synergy between East, West, taking the best from both worlds and like
most
integrating.
And in hospitals in China, they use both, right? To integrate both. They actually use interesting comp, like IV with Chinese medicinal herbs, right? You're like, what? They do that in Asia or in China, right? And so it's amazing what's being done right now and how they're using a lot of modern research techniques to further understand these medicines that were used for thousands of years. It's beautiful.
And I think to your point, there's a lot more research being done right now, especially on how the herbs are being synergistically extracted and
how they use complementary together.
Because I think in the Western sense, it's really like this herb performs this way and this herb is but what happens when you fuse it together? How does it complement each other?
And there's a lot of lack of research actually about how, when things are combined together, what happens. Even in food, for instance, right? We have a lot of mixing of different cuisines, different flavors to kind of like create a interesting flavor profile. But is it really nutritious for us? Like, will we absorb the nutrients that comes from flavor combination or, different ingredient combination? So it's going to be really fascinating as science uncovers what's working, what's not working. And I always go back to like, hey, there, ancient times we were performing science, right? If you think about what is science, it's like, you have an hypothesis, you have an experiment, you observe, right? You take down the results and then you reevaluate and you continue on that path. And so a lot of these herbs have actually been used on human beings and they've helped them. And so there's a lot of, and that's why these ancient medical texts, like they're there because, they wrote down all the observations and what happens. And there's a lot of trial and error, most definitely. So in terms of how they're applied into food, oftentimes that's why it's integrated into the cuisine, because we notice that these few herbs are very mild tonics. They're not intense in a sense of like, if you overconsume it, it won't be, bad. So a lot of the herbs that we have in our cuisine, in Cantonese cuisine or Chinese cuisine, like you put, whether you're using lily bulbs or what is it? A mountain yam or like a dates, right? The jujubes or like the hongzhaos, right? Or even the goji berries. Like these are foods that are very mild and you can actually consume.
So, I love that, we're transitioning and talking about food. to come back to food. I think that, and even when I'm watching your channel on Yina, you guys are always making something to, eat or drink alongside, using your skincare, right? What are some of your favorite maybe soups or teas or even dessert that you think are really good for your skin.
So we talked about the topic of qi and blood, right? So the herbs that help boost qi and blood are, so a quick thing is even like a drink beverage, right? You could have a little bit of rosebuds with like maybe two slices of donghui to boost your blood. And if you want a little bit of sweet, you could add a little bit of red date or even goji berries or even what we call longan, which is like the longan fruit. So like that's a nice combo. You can put it in a thermos and you just keep on adding hot water. You can drink it throughout the day. There are some people that maybe like they need a little extra boost. Maybe they're working way too hard. I would highly recommend maybe even the thermos of huangqi, which is the astragalus root. That would help. It's a very mild tonic and you can just also drink that throughout the day. There is something about over tonifying. So I know in Cantonese culture, we tend to be like, bo, 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 like,
yeah,
like tonify. And I'm like, actually not really, like that can actually have an adverse effect if you're over tonifying. So I would say maybe pull back on that. If you don't know, definitely go see a practitioner. They will do the pulse, see what's happening, you know, with your constitution and give you a recommendation of what you should be doing. But back to skin. So again, making sure that we have good qi and blood. So you want to eat, make sure you eat a well-balanced diet that affects skin. Also hydration in the sense of not necessarily you chugging, you know, eight cups of water a day. Like that's not what we consider as hydration. Hydration is like, hey, are you thirsty? Are you quenching your thirst? Are you absorbing the liquid that comes through your body? Technically you are, but are you just like, is it just peeing out or is it really hydrating your body? Are you feeling like your skin is staying hydrated? Because if you are absorbing the hydration well enough, then your skin will be nice and hydrated instead of dry, right? There's so many things, but as you can see on our social media channel, we always talk about various different things, but those are the big ones. And I would say rest, sleep. Sleep is golden. Okay.
Yeah.
If you don't put anything in your skin, just go to sleep. Sleep is just so important because you're detoxing and you want the full detox. You know, if you take anything from this talk, I would say recommend to sleep before 11 p.m. You can do 10, that would be even better. But before 11, as in like you're sleeping, so then when you get into deep sleep, you can really take the time to detox fully and then wake up. It's better to sleep early and then wake up early. But I know I know some of us love like scrolling on
our phone. Easier said than done. But I think that it's important to have a good sleep routine. So what is your sleep routine?
A routine. So an hour before you're planning on sleeping. So I would say maybe in 2 hours, like by 9 o'clock, don't look at a digital device. You can do other things that are fulfilling your love of hobbies, whether it's reading a book or some kind of craft, or maybe just even sitting, talking to your loved ones. Do that, and then you go into sleep mode, right? And then, of course, self-care. So an hour before, when you're winding down, doing your skincare routine or doing your gua sha to kind of help release tension, or you can even do a sitting meditation just for, you know, 5 to 10 minutes to kind of help ground your energy. And then you go to bed, you lie in bed. Maybe if you are by yourself, then you do nice, deep, restorative breaths. So I always tell people who are having a hard time sleeping to do 3 deep breaths. And the deep breaths I'm talking about is like where you're breathing in and then you're doing a really loud exhale where you're actually vocal about it. You're like, ha, right? And just do times. And by the 3rd exhale, I kid you not, you will be knocked out.
I need to try that tonight.
All that. So try that. Like, but really when you're like exhaling, you're like, like really let go of all the day's tension, whatever. It doesn't matter. You're going to sleep and let it all go and you will fall asleep.
Amazing.
Of course, after that, you breathe normally. So don't continue.
Amazing. And okay, so we went through your night routine. Now I want to hear your daily skincare routine. What happens first thing in the morning?
I wake up. I actually go and drink a warm cup of water. Hydration. Water is really good. Just plain water. I like it warm. So in Chinese medicine, we usually steer away from ice water or cold water because that what we call that injures the spleen. But if you're not used to it, then room temperature is fine. And you have a glass of water, and then I go about with my routine of brushing my teeth, and then I it's simplistic. I think I follow the more of those simplistic modes of skincare where I actually don't cleanse my face in the morning. I do it mainly in the evening, and then I wake up, hydrate with our essential mist. Then I would put our serum, so one of our botanical serums, which are to mimic the seasons, actually. When we first launched the four botanical serums, we called it by the seasons, but people got so confused. So we had to change the packaging and call
But
it
I
for
love
what
that though.
it was. And, so right now we are in spring, so I'm using Fortify, and then of course summer is Clarify, and then autumn is regenerate, and then winter is nourish. So
Okay, so it's important to change along the seasons, right?
So like you're changing your outfits, you're changing your clothes. Why not change what you do with your skincare, which I highly recommend. So you should change up a little bit, and you notice like heavy creams just don't really work as well in the summertime when it's so hot, right, and sticky, and you're like, oh, I want something lighter. Serum, and then we do our HydroCloud is great. A little bit goes a long way. I have some customers who are like, I feel like there's a film on my skin. I'm like, how much did you put? Like, it's literally, we recommend a pea size. And sometimes people like to be very generous and do a huge dollop, but a little goes a long way. So pea size is plenty. And then I finish up with my sunblock. And then, on days if I wear makeup, then I have makeup, but very light. Otherwise, most of the time I don't. But sunblock is very, very important. So don't forget about that.
That's
And then
something
I
that
eat
I
breakfast. So breakfast is huge. Like you,
talk a
that's.
little bit about that because I feel like everybody I speak to is just cutting out breakfast these days.
That's a no-no. You want breakfast. So there's a saying in Chinese where it's like your biggest meal of the day should be your breakfast, and then you have your medium-sized meal lunch and a smallest size meal in the dinner, like in the evening. Like, and then you say, well, why? Because in the morning is actually when your gut is like, I'm ready to work for you. Like, I'm ready to digest whatever you give me. You want to eat. Big meal doesn't mean super heavy meal. It's just like, okay, a substantial meal that you feel like, oh, I'm satiated. It should have a lot of protein because you want to make sure that you have enough of it and it won't cause a crazy, insulin spike. So you have your protein, you have maybe a little veggie. So sometimes, I don't know if you've seen like, breakfast time, you have a little bowl of porridge and then you have some like, dishes, like the classic Chinese breakfast. A lot of us don't have time for that. I understand. So,
I actually used to see my grandfather eat that. I was like, oh, I wish I had time for that. He had his fish and then he has porridge and then he is like, it's super balanced, right? But you're like,
Yeah, very
who
balanced. They
eats
have a little
that way?
salt, but
But it makes so much sense to eat
that is a
that way.
Yangtze breakfast where you have a little bit of everything and then you have your rice porridge because rice has always been thought as like it's a really mild, neutral grain that is very nourishing. I know people are what is it? They have mixed feelings about rice, but you don't have to eat a lot of it. Just a little bit goes a long way. So in a porridge form, right? One cup creates a big pot of it. It's quite diluted. I think it's perfect medium for to kind of wake up your appetite. And then you have some veggie with a little bit of protein. And if you don't have time to make fish, you can make eggs, right? You can use a few eggs, like two eggs, it's perfect. And then a pickle, like definitely do a lacto-fermented thing and not too much of it, just a little bit to kind of again help wake up your palate in the morning.
Yeah, that's
Well,
so important.
that's what my ideal breakfast would be like porridge and rice and, I mean, not rice, but veggie and a protein. But normally I do all sorts of things like I do, but definitely protein heavy. I do sometimes I do a frittata or I do, but I make it a priority as like breakfast is very, very important. More so than dinner. Actually, dinner time, I might have a light soup, but if I'm out with my friends, they'll eat a meal, but I don't eat as much. And you know why? Because if you eat a huge meal at dinner time, then when you're going to bed, which is I don't know how many hours after you've eaten dinner, if it's like within 2 or 3 hours, then your dinner won't be digested. Your digestion is just sluggish in the evening time. So then everything just sits there and it's sort of breaking down very, very slowly, and then it causes indigestion, and then you might even have acid reflux and all these other things that might. So I don't know if you felt it, but like definitely for me, when I have a heavy meal in the evening, it's I just can't sleep. Like I need to take something to kind of help me break it down, or I go for a walk, which is very helpful too after a meal.
I think I'm similar. If I have a really heavy meal, I just can't sleep, and it just doesn't feel good going into it, and then you don't
Exactly.
feel well rested the next day, and you still feel sort of like that heaviness, right?
Exactly. Because your body hasn't had time to really extract all its nutrients and the chi that you're supposed to absorb from it. And then in the morning, you just feel very weighed down. You feel very full. So then you don't eat breakfast because you feel still full. And then by the time lunch hits, you're starving. And then you go on this vicious cycle of eating.
Yeah, so you
So.
have these spikes, right?
So definitely recommend breakfast for those who you guys anti-breakfast. Start small. You can even do like a warm smoothie.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Like a lot of the Asian markets have like the cereals that like have like sesame seeds or black beans and rice, and they grind it up into kind of like a warm smoothie that you can take.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Okay, breakfast, warm breakfast smoothie. I'm gonna be adding that to my list of things to eat in the morning.
It sounds weird, but it's delicious.
Yeah, no, that's so true. I think that sometimes having something really cold in the morning is just like a really shock to the system. So I like warm breakfast smoothie as an option. And it sounds you can do it really quickly and take it on the go sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's working on building these habits. I know some people are like, well, I only do cereal with like cold milk, and it's questionable. Then it's see why you would like it, but maybe you can do something warm prior to the cereal and then you eat your cereal after that. So.
I think it's all a balance, right? Angela, I'd love to talk more about sort of the, looking forward in terms of Yina's developments and things that you're really looking into and sort of, just looking forward. What do you see for the brand?
Well, we continue striving to create products that really help benefit people in general. I think for us, that's always been, I think at the heart of it all, both Irvine and I are very much practitioners. Like, we really want to help people. And so there's all these products out there. You're like, really? Another skincare product? And
Yeah,
so
there's
when
so
we
many all the
embark,
time,
yes, yeah, so
right?
many already. When we embark on this journey, we're like, well, we really want to help share what Chinese medicine has to offer, what East Asian medicine has to offer to a wider audience in a way that's understandable, whether it's something topical. We started diving into internal things. Last year, we launched our TCM collagen gummy, which is, I hope you tried it. If you haven't tried it, I'll send one your way. Super delicious. And we just want to inspire people to really have a balanced lifestyle, because I know it's so stressful at times when we're go, go, go. Working so hard. Commend you all for all the hard work. But another big priority is also rest. So we use Yina to inspire you to take some time for yourself for self-care, whether it's just setting aside 10, 15 minutes for you to do your nightly or morning skincare ritual, doing massage techniques with a Gua Sha tool, just to be with yourself to realize, like, hey, wow, there's some tension here. Why am I holding this tension? Can I help release this tension to let it go? And by you doing all these little steps, they're little, but they're actually mighty, because over time it becomes a ritual. It's a preventative thing. It becomes like something that is part of you in terms of how you can de-stress, how you can also be healthy, nourish your body, and be in a state of clarity. That's how I see it.
That makes sense. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I wanted to close with the question that I ask everybody. What is your secret to looking and feeling your best? I know you've given us so many tips already, so
I have given so
what's
many
your
tips. I gave you too
absolute
many tips.
favorite?
Oh my gosh. No, just kidding. If anyone can take some of these tips and really do it and follow it, please let us know, because it's really a community effort. It's not just a personal journey. So that's what we also want to do at Nina. We're like, hey, we're doing this together. What we share, Irvine and I share online, it's stuff that we do on a daily basis. So we're like, it works for us. I hope it works for you. So, I mean, my tip is really having just 10 minutes. I say start with 10 minutes. If you don't have 10 minutes, 5 minutes, time in the morning to just sit and not do anything. Mm-hmm. So that's part of my morning ritual that I forgot to mention, but I, you know, have time where I just sit and you don't do anything and you allow yourself to just focus on your breath, empty your mind. If you can do a little bit longer, that's even better, but 5 to 10 minutes a day. And it really helps you just ground your energy so that you can kind of start your day and not feel like you're flustered and you're constantly, you know, running about. So yeah, that's something I recommend everyone that they should incorporate into their life. Like 5 to 10 minutes in the morning, just wake up, have a, you know, glass of warm water, sit for a few minutes. If you can do some exercises, great. Don't have time, that's okay too. You can do squats in between lunch. But, and have a breakfast. That's important.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. I'll definitely be incorporating that. And yes, I think that we don't pause enough and give us, you know, have that sort of break between all the noise you get during the day. So I think that is really, really great for our listeners. Pause and have that sort of moment to yourself, especially in the morning, to declutter. So thank you so much for sharing everything with us today.
Thanks for having me. And it's thank you for allowing me to share Yina journey and, you know, what we have to offer. So we're constantly churning out new things. You know, if you guys, your listeners, have any things they want to hear about from us, let us know. You can check us out at hello@yina.co as an email, or yina.co on Instagram.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And I know you just launched your new lip balms, right?
I have it here. Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. Amazing.
I'm going to send you one. It's
amazing. I'm so excited.
It's sort of like, this is our kind of like, what is it? What do you call it? Like coming about, roundabout, where both. So this is the evolution of the lip balm.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
The new recovery lip treatment.
Ooh. I'm a big lip treatment person, so I can't wait to try it.
Oh, so you'd be a good judge, because it took us a long time to get this right. Because again, you know, we are very picky about what type of lip balm that we wanted to, or treatment that we wanted to create. And it's not sticky and it's light. And then also you don't have to keep on reapplying, because sometimes there's some
that like you literally are just like this all day long. Yeah.
Exactly. So this doesn't do that. Yeah. Two times. That's all you need.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much again.
Thank you so much, Steph, for having me. And hope everyone picked up some kind of tip, and hopefully they can apply it in their lives.
For sure. Thank you. Thanks for hanging out with us on the Nucci podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love your support. Leave us a rating, drop us a review, or share it with someone who'd enjoy it too. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode.